Hello and welcome to the Pintcast. Joining me today is James of Gunnerblog. You can follow him on Twitter at Gunnerblog. You can read his writing on Bleacher Report and listen to him weekly on Mondays on the wonderful Arscast Extra. It's a pleasure to have you, James. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. Yeah, much better after the Spurs result, certainly. How are you doing?
Likewise, it's certainly had a great upturn in fortune for my week. It's It had been pretty dire, not going to lie. But you can always...
Even outside football?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Well, there are worse things. It hasn't been that bad. But the thing is, when you live on the west coast of the United States and Arsenal play at 4:45 in the morning...
Yeah.
And it's before 7 a.m. and you're pissed and you're literally pissed.
Yeah.
And it's not even 7 fucking a.m. It's a bad start to the weekend.
That is not a great start to the day. No. I accept that.
So that is less than ideal. But, you know, I don't let it get to me too much. I just try to ignore. You know, I kind of try to go radio silent or just block out everything afterwards and ignore all the messages of hate and the shit talking from the friends.
I'm the same. I have like my DVR type thing set to record like all the highlights, match of the day, everything like that. But if the result doesn't go our way, I just delete everything.
Yeah,
never.
I don't want to see any of it. No. How was your brother?
Oh, my brother, the Chelsea fan. He was actually pretty tolerable. And I'll tell you why, because he didn't see the game. He was busy elsewhere. So thank goodness for that, because honestly, it would have been a nightmare. But I had a big conversation with him about Costa, actually, once he had caught up with the highlights. Because I was really intrigued to know, like, as a Chelsea fan, how he felt about that. Like, was he embarrassed? And to be fair to him, he was like, I really don't like seeing that kind of thing from my team. He was like, I appreciate that the guy's a winner, he's very determined, he's very driven, but I don't like having that associated with my club. And it's sort of an interesting dilemma, isn't it? Like, how would you feel if Costa was in a red shirt rather than a blue shirt in that fixture, you know? Like, do you just not care because he plays for your team and he helps get results? Or would you feel awkward about it? I suppose we had similar questions about Suarez, although the situation was pretty different in that respect. But
yeah, but it's still relatively similar. I mean, because you think about someone who, you know, is not that popular a figure in the eye of the public sphere in that sense because of their actions and what they do. You know, I think before he moved, I would have gladly taken Costa at Arsenal. You know, I follow Atletico in Spain. So, you know, he did a lot for them and was a very pivotal player. But you see that he's always been a guy who, as they say, you know, plays on the edge and is a nightmare. You know, he's a handful to deal with. But, you know, it crosses a line. And he loves being on that edge and going over it because when he knows he can get away with it, he does everything he can. And in that sense, you do have to put him in that category with Suarez as a guy who will push the boundaries, not just of decency, but certainly of just of the rules as well, to do anything and everything he can to win a match.
Yeah.
And to it's wind amazing. Someone up. So,
and for the most part, until now at least, get away with it. That's the thing. Like, obviously he's been punished retrospectively and that's a relief, but he still hasn't been sent off in a game for 5 years. And I asked my brother, who watches him every week, how do you think he manages that? How do you think he escapes punishment on the field so often? And his theory, I don't know how much credence to give it, but he said it's to do with how Costa manages the referee, essentially. He says that you'll notice that as soon as there's any incident, he's always first to talk to the referee. He always makes himself appear the victim. And in that case, it becomes very hard for the referee to then punish him because he's the guy who's ostensibly on the side of the officials, flagging up all these problems.
Okay, so he's clearly a con artist, you know? And it's one of those, I mean, you know, if you've played football and you're around those kind of guys, you know how it is. As soon as the referee turns around, you know, the referee could be less than 5 yards from you. But as soon as he turns around to run away, you know, he's going to punch you in the gut. He's going to twist your nipple. He's going to kick your ankle, you know, intentionally that close just to rile somebody up.
And it's interesting as well because, you know, I haven't seen loads of Costa. I've seen him more at Chelsea than I did at Atletico. But in terms of his pure technical ability, I'm not sure he's at that top level, that kind of, you know, even a level associated with the price tag they paid for it. But I actually think that a lot of this gamesmanship and this kind of game intelligence that he has, that's probably partially what elevates him. Because I personally, I'm not convinced that sort of from a technical basis, he is a top-class player, but he seems to have that extra edge that helps him hit those heights.
I feel like you have to put him somewhere in the category near Giroud in that sense.
Yeah.
Of I guess you would call them a very, very good center forward, maybe even an elite, but not world class. But like you said, that edge. And then also, I mean, his form over his last two seasons at Atletico was pretty spectacular. Like, I didn't think when Falcao left that he would be able to step in that same way that he did. But no. I mean, he did score some pretty impressive goals that, you know, that technique, like, you know, like when Giroud scored that goal against, who the fuck was it when he scored that? It wasn't West Ham, was it? The volley from the cross?
Crystal Palace.
Sorry. So, you know, he scored a couple goals like that, you know, more like an overhead kick off a cross and stuff like that, that you don't really expect too much from a man his size.
Yeah.
So to his credit, you know, I think he's a pretty decent technically. He's got a little more pace than Giroud in that sense, which I think makes a big difference for him because he can get away from defenders. But yeah. But he seems like a loathsome human being in all ways, shapes, and forms. You know, it's funny. Does. I mean, you know, I doubt that all Chelsea fans are as level headed as your brother.
I agree with that, probably. Yeah. You know,
because I mean, look, it's so typical that Jose Mourinho would come out and say he was man of the match and then defend him and all that. And, you know, the Chelsea fans are going to get behind that and rally around that. And, you know, and I see that a lot, you know, with them and with Jose in particular. And I'm sure it surprised nobody that was his response after the match.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's part of the wind-up, right? That's classic Mourinho. I think it's interesting, the comparison you draw with Giroud, I think it's really interesting because if you look at Giroud, I think that element of his personality is partially what's lacking. You know, I think that he's this guy who's got this incredible physical prowess, very athletic, very good technical level. We talked about that goal against Palace, but there have been countless really pretty spectacular goals by Giroud. Aerial ability too. But he just doesn't seem to have that same fight. I'm not saying you want him to go out there behaving like Costa, but I feel like if you could inject a little bit of that darkness into him, I think you'd have a far better player.
Yeah, it's fine margins, you know, because it's the question, he seems like a really nice guy. Well, that's good and great. You want him to be a little bit nastier, you know? I mean, like, to be fair, you do want
exactly
him
that.
You want him stepping on the toes of the center of the center backs on occasion, you know? You want him doing that here and there, but, you know, we've seen clear examples of it going too far and it being, say, not enough. So, I mean, you know, after the weekend, it was a pretty rough week for us after the disappointment in the Champions League, you know, then just laying a fucking egg against Chelsea. I mean, it's not that we played that poorly overall, but it's, you know, regardless of what happened, it's still the result stays the same. It's another loss to Jose Mourinho. But what better tonic than coming up against Tottenham midweek?
Well, exactly. And I'll be honest, I really feared the worst because two defeats on the bounce, and then we have going into this third game away at White Hart Lane. You know, although we're generally dominant in the derby, we lost there last season in the league, and it's always a tricky fixture.
Yes.
Add into that realistically, Spurs know this is probably one of two, you know, two chances they have to win a domestic title.
Totally.
You know, so it's a massive priority for them. And in fact, I was really surprised that they changed their team as much as they did. And a little bit surprised we changed ours as much as we did. I thought Arsenal might feel under pressure to play a really strong 11 in this game just to avoid a third consecutive defeat. But as it happened, both teams rotated and, you know, the result, I mean, I think the result's fantastic, but the way it came about, obviously nobody could have predicted with Mathieu Flamini, the goal scoring here, the toast of North London.
Right. Who could have predicted that, really?
Yeah. Seriously, because when the teams came out, I imagine his was probably the name that upset most people. You know, Arsenal made a number of changes. He brought in Debuchy, brought in Gibbs, Ospina, Campbell came in, Giroud came in, Arteta. But Flamini is probably the one who stood out. He's barely kicked a ball. In fact, I don't think he had kicked a ball.
No, I think this was his first competitive match all season, right?
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. And there'd been talk in the summer of a move to Turkey. No surprise he chose to stick around and see out his contract. We know that's how he likes to do this. Exactly. Yeah.
He likes those bumper sign-on deals on his Bosman. So there was that was practically never
right.
in doubt.
Which is his right.
True.
But exactly. So he, you know, he stuck around. He's done that. And I thought, I mean, the first goal, the way he celebrated that, it really felt like he was out there making a point. You know, he's a long way from the first team picture.
Absolutely.
But an injury to Wilshere, an injury to Coquelin. He's climbed up the pecking order a little, and he really took his chance. And what was really surprising for me was to see this guy who's played predominantly as a pure holding player since he came back to the club, kind of liberated in a box to box role. I mean, the way he scored his first goal, furthest man forward, you know, chasing onto that shot from Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and he's got the energy levels, and he really seemed to relish it. So
yeah, it seemed a bit Ramsey-esque in that sense, in terms of, you know, trying to follow up, you know, in that same way when Ramsey plays the eight, the, you know, the box to box role, similar.
Well, that's what I thought we'd see with Coquelin out. I thought we'd see Arteta and Ramsey back together. But it looks like Arsene went for a little bit more defensive stability. I mean, he's not got that many options if he wants to rotate at the moment, just because of the injury situation. But the second goal, I mean, he scored one. I remember a really spectacular goal he scored for us against Newcastle a few years ago. I don't know if you recall that. I think it was in 2008 where he just pinged it.
This was the season before he left, right? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, when he was in a contract year.
Last year of his contract, we should have known he would be this good this against Spurs. But he scored an incredible one from like 30 yards. But this was a brilliant take. And just the sort of thing where, as it was dropping, you could see he was going to hit it. And they were all thinking, why on earth? This isn't something he's got in his locker, you know?
Right.
But proved us all wrong. And that's always nice to see as well. A player who's been a little bit heavily criticised by the fans, showing them that he's still got something to offer.
Now, do you think that this would ever happen, that second goal would ever happen, if he hadn't scored the first?
Probably not, you know.
Right.
Probably not. I do think that it's cumulative, isn't it? He had a bit of... I mean, when the first dropped to him, I thought he was going to miss, actually. He hit it with such height. He lifted it over the goalie. I thought he'd skied it over the bar. And but having got that goal, I guess he had that little bit of extra belief, extra conviction.
Yeah, that feeling, once you've scored a goal, you feel like you can do anything. I mean, look, we're not to make this comparison in the exact same way, but we did just see one Robert Lewandowski score five goals in 9 minutes a couple days ago. And, you know, and you look at the way he scores his fifth goal, which is the best of the bunch. You know, it's a chilena, it's a side volley off a cross. But then it's like, well, would he score that if he had come in cold and hadn't scored anything? Possibly, because he has that in his locker. But, you know, the confidence that he had when he sees that ball drop, considering what he had just done, and obviously this, after scoring four goals, is a little different than just having just scored one. But, but you know, he knew when he saw that, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm getting this. And you knew that he was looking for that ball and looking to put it away, which is something that I also saw, you know, when Flamini saw the way it was going to drop to him. Like you said, you saw him setting up for it. Three steps in advance, getting his paces right, so he's able to hit it on the, you know, with the right kind of technique, and you know, he had that confidence in him to put it away. So what a goal to win a match.
And I think that's so interesting because, you know, you think about when Lewandowski got those goals the other night. They ran a thing on the BBC about the fastest hat tricks in Premier League history. I think Sadio Mane scored one last year. That's the quickest ever. You know, 2 or 3 minutes a hat trick. And that's not fluke that happens. I do think that you're imbued with this sort of extra level of confidence after a goal that enables you to try and do things that you wouldn't ordinarily. And that's the great intangible about goal scoring, I think. This idea of form and, you know, how players go on runs where they score in consecutive games, but then runs where they don't.
It's belief.
Yeah, it is. But there's no, I guess there's no, not yet anyway, a sort of scientific measure for that and no... You know what I mean?
And, yeah, that's tough. You'd have to have some sort of, electrodes or some nodes connected to brain activity. I don't know. Seems a little complex to be able to measure that within the match.
Yeah, and there are always outliers as well. I'm sure Nicholas Bentner always scored highly on the belief, but not necessarily on the results.
Right.
But, like, I do think that, like, that is so fascinating. And, you know, you look at a guy like Alexis, I think we're 8 games into his season with us now, still no goals, and yet, if he was to get one, it wouldn't surprise you if he then followed up with 5 and 5. It's such a strange thing, but clearly has a massive impact on players' performances.
Yeah, you know, I read your article. You recently wrote an article about Alexis and his goal-scoring drought so far. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of factors that come into play. And like you said, like, you know, confidence could make it all change. Like, I'm a firm believer you come out, you know, as soon as he scores one, it's going to come in bunches. You know, that wouldn't surprise me at all. But, you know, I mean, obviously, he's obviously worn out. He's had quite a very long year to year and a half, you know, you'd say, with the long summer of the Copa America, the World Cup summer before, first season in English football. I mean, it's pretty tough to consider anyone who wouldn't be worn out from that. But
of course, it's been a marathon for him, you know.
But, you know, considering how questionable our form has really been and without an establishment, I mean, look, Flamini's now our joint top scorer, right? We have Theo and Theo Giroud and him all on 2 goals. Is that right?
And
own goal, of course. Let's not forget own goal.
Oh, own goal? Is, oh, we're and own goal on two.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I think Flamini for the Golden Boot this year seems to be the case.
That seems but fair.
Alexis is a really interesting one. I think the encouraging thing, I wrote this in my piece, but is that he's still getting a huge number of chances.
Right.
It's not as if he's not involved. And I do wonder, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Arsenal's attacking game not clicking, and I was intrigued to read the comments from Harry Redknapp today, of all people. Did you see those?
No, I have not.
Well, listen, he's not someone whose tactical advice I ever put too much stock in.
Yeah, but I usually don't go to him for a tactical.
No, me neither. But he was talking in his column today about the reasons he think Arsenal haven't quite found their flow in going forward. And he talked about the problem of rotating Giroud and Walcott, simply because they're such different strikers, almost polar opposites, really.
Right.
That maybe there's it's creating a bit of, I don't know, the attacking shape is a bit disjointed, because in every game, when those strikers swap in and out, they're having to adapt to a different way of playing. I do wonder if there might be something in that, because in the past couple of years, we've built a team to play off Giroud primarily. All those neat little flick-ons in and around the box. And now it seems, in the Premier League at least, Arsenal favours Walcott. And that does require some adjustment, especially for a guy like Alexis, who's been able to feed off Giroud.
Sure.
And can't really do that in the same way off Theo.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that, you know, it's been quite a while since I've seen us look good, really like look good and flowing in attack with Walcott out there. Like you said, I mean, that's, we've been built to play off Giroud for seasons now. And that's really, I mean, the last few times that we've seen us actually playing well has been in that mold where we've had our complementary players playing off of them, you know, the Ozils, the Ramsays, the Alexis, you know, occasionally Oxlade-Chamberlain. But, you know, using that, I mean, it's been a while since we've seen some sort of fluency from a team using Walcott in that way, you know, and that's, I think that's,
yeah.
And I think that's a big reason why we haven't seen a lot of influence from him when he started matches from the beginning. You know, we haven't had that attacking fluency or looked really coherent up there in that capacity. I'm really doubtful about Redknapp writing that article. He definitely dictated that to somebody. Didn't he claim at one point he couldn't read or couldn't type or some shit? So, there was something ridiculous a few years back. So I'm sure he's dictating that and someone else types it in for him.
Yeah, I'm sure that is what happens. I mean, it was very strange because he said, I can't read or write. And then within a year, I think he started tweeting. So something's awry somewhere along the line.
And of course, tweeting but, with every tweet to a link to something that pays him, of course.
I'm sure.
I've seen those tweets. I don't remember what the company is, but I'm not going to give them a free plug anyway, so they can go fuck themselves.
Okay, good.
But
I think your point on Theo is a really good one. No, I was just saying your point on Theo is a really good one, like really interesting, because when he's in the team, yes, he offers a goal threat, and yes, he has scored a couple of goals this season. But when you think about those types of goals, they're kind of goals out of nothing, right? They're kind of goals that are from over the top
counter attack, something incisive,
yeah.
But not our typical Arsenal build up.
Exactly. Not a consequence of a kind of well put together move necessarily. They've been counter attack goals. And maybe there's a case that Arsene sees that the midfield isn't functioning as well as it might. So he's employing Theo because he knows he's someone who can get you a goal out of nothing. Whereas Giroud is perhaps more dependent on that game, collective game functioning in a way that it's currently not. I don't know. It's a really interesting one. I'm surprised at the degree to which Arsene seems to have faith in Theo. I rate him very highly, but I thought that Arsene was very wedded to the idea of Giroud as his centre forward. But it seems that is in a process of evolution at the moment.
I think a lot of that just has to come down to circumstance, really. You know, I mean, I think Theo probably would have been third on the centre forward pecking order should Danny Welbeck have been fit. I still really rate Theo as well. You know, we did get a glance of him on the right side again, when Oxlade-Chamberlain got cramped in the last 5 minutes of the match yesterday. Considering the understanding that Theo and Olivier had together in those positions, him playing wide from the right, and, you know, he provided so much of Giroud's service over his first couple seasons, you know, I'm surprised we don't see that more. Look, I am a firm believer in Oxlade-Chamberlain and him being probably the right long-term option on that wing. But, you know, he hasn't shown enough end game so far you know, end product. Not that he won't, but you know, I feel like we should be seeing more of, you know, say whichever one starts, you know, whoever starts center forward. But at some point, if it's not working, you get 60, 70 minutes in the match and say Ox isn't that effective on the right, if you start that lineup, you know, you go to playing with them because they have a good understanding. Why not give them 20 minutes with Giroud up front and Walcott off of him, either just off of him as a second striker or off him to the right, which we've seen so much success in the past.
Yeah, it's really interesting going back to White Hart Lane last night, because it feels like that White Hart Lane fixture back in the spring last season is where Arsenal effectively decided against deploying Walcott on the right-hand side, because that was the game where he stood off Danny Rose, the cross came in, Harry Kane headed the winner. We really haven't seen him out there since. And I do feel like he seems to have decided almost that he's kind of a liability on that side. You know, he's got this team now which requires more from the wide players. But I kind of share your view that Walcott may be, you know, more effective from the right-hand side than he is through the middle. Let's not forget, he scored... People talk about, you know, the season where he scored 21 goals. I think it was 2012-13.
From the right.
A lot of those goals came from the right, yeah. There were a couple of performances where he played through the middle. The Newcastle 8-3 game, or 7-3, whichever it was, jumps out. But that was an anomaly, really.
Really?
And, yeah, predominantly, he was playing from the right. And I do think that he still offers enormous attacking threat that way. I just don't think Arsene believes he can get away with Alexis, Giroud and Walcott all in the same team. I'm not sure that's something he is inclined to do, which is a shame, because I do think in certain home games, that would be pretty exciting to watch.
That would be pretty tasty. I mean, so what do you think about this, though? Because, I mean, really, 3 or 4 years ago, we're talking about, you know, like the 2012-2013 season, you know, there was, we had seen a marked improvement in what Theo could do on the right, as well as, I think, being a little better defensively in terms of covering his fullback. Now, granted, look, he did have Sanya there during that time, who was quite a rock for us, which helped him out quite a bit. But it seemed like, you know, he had learned how to take care of a lot of the defensive, getting back, tracking back and covering his men. I mean, for me, the feeling that I kind of got in the recent seasons where he started to lack there was just the fact that, because he wanted to play as a central striker, regardless of where he was played, he kept kind of hanging up there as opposed to tracking back and trying to stay up there and tucking in as kind of a second striker, which it seems is not so much that he's not capable of playing it, because I feel like he was pretty effective doing that and tracking back in years past, but he's just wants to forget that aspect and just play up front by himself. I don't know.
Yeah, and I have to say, I wonder if that's maybe a slight weakness in Arsene's coaching arsenal, as it were, Arsenal in the other sense of the word, because I don't think one of his skills is at his best as a coach when he's getting players to do what they want to do.
Right.
You know, when they're playing their game. And I think we've seen that in the past when he's tried to convert someone like Abu Diaby into a defensive-minded midfielder. Eventually, he kind of gave up on the idea because Diaby fundamentally wanted to express himself going forward.
Right.
And the same with, to an extent, with Jack Wilshere. We've seen Jack Wilshere pull deeper, but now Arsene's releasing him in the final third. I think Arsene, he's needed someone like Coquelin to come along who genuinely wants to play that role. Right. And, you know, I think it's the same with Theo. Theo sees himself as a striker, sees himself as a goal scorer, and I'm not sure that Arsene has the kind of tactical discipline, really, carries that kind of disciplinary weight to instruct Walcott and give him the necessary direction he requires to competently fill that role.
I'm going to do something that never happens on the Pintcast. I'm going to compliment one, maybe Mourinho and Rafa Benitez, both guys who I'm not a big fan of, but I mean, that would never happen in their teams. And if there's one thing you can say about them in that kind of sense, like I think they're, Rafa Benitez, I just think he's kind of a douchebag, whereas Mourinho's just a complete asshole and a total dick. But, you know, tactical discipline and playing your role and knowing exactly what you're going to do and doing your job is of utmost importance. I mean, I think it's pretty ridiculous. We were talking about this thing the other week, Joseph and I, about, you know, all the players that have left Chelsea in the past couple seasons. You know, there's, you know, what is it, 150, 200 million pounds worth of talent that's been signed and discarded over the past couple seasons in ridiculously skilled attacking players. But if they aren't willing to do the job that Mourinho has wanted them to do in their exact position, they've been out. You know, there's a reason. There's a reason why a guy like Willian is still there and playing in that position, because of the work rate that he gives them. So,
yeah, and I mean, was it the right decision to sell Juan Mata? I don't know, but I certainly know that Arsene Wenger wouldn't have done that. You know, no, he would have indulged him. And I'm not saying that's necessarily true one way or the other. And I mean, the other example with Mourinho is the way he laid into Joe Cole so publicly at a time when Cole was actually playing pretty effectively in an attacking sense for Chelsea. He did the same to an extent with Eden Hazard when he came back after being with Inter in Madrid. You know, these players who ostensibly are making a massive contribution on the attacking front, he will publicly criticise them and make them, force them to confront their defensive weaknesses. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that from Arsene. It's not his character, it's not his style either. He's an attacking coach, but I think that means that when he recruits defensive players or fields defensive players, there's a degree to which they have to do some of the mental work themselves. And that's why somebody like a Mertesacker, who is a defender and nothing more, or somebody like a Coquelin, who doesn't seem to have the kind of ego associated with attacking players, who genuinely relishes some of the dirtier aspects of the game, is absolutely invaluable to Arsene, because I'm not sure he can make a player into that sort of player. I think he needs them to kind of fall into his lap.
Yeah, they have to have that kind of coming into it, really, because, yeah, like you said, he's not going to develop that.
Yeah.
I mean, Coquelin, it's great watching. I mean, like I played a mixture of attack and defense throughout my youth. And, you know, there's one aspect that I really, like, I hated playing defense. I fucking couldn't stand it. I liked going forward. But there was an aspect that I relished. I played center back for a couple seasons. You know, getting stuck into the tackles, winning big tackles was always like that. That was the one thing I liked about it. And that's something you see in Coquelin, that, you know, sometimes his interceptions are almost as exciting as as a really good flowing move going forward because of the way he breaks it up. And but you see to him that there's like a joy in his face, and there's something that he really appreciates and likes about that, you know, other players don't particularly care for in that same fashion. So it's beautiful to have, you know, you have to have some of those players, and we're not going to develop them ourselves. But if they come in with that kind of instinct, that's great. I mean, I'm not going to act like I'm the only person who thought Coquelin was decent back before he got his turnout. But I mean, for his big thing for me, even watching him with our youth FA Cup team that won years ago, his accuracy in tackling and the way he relishes a tackle has always been one of his most key characteristics that I've seen. And it's something, I mean, really, we really hope he can be back soon, because as much as we saw a very good performance from Mathieu Flamini yesterday, we all know that that can change quite drastically very quickly. So, I mean, to count on him would be a little tough.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's pretending that Flamini now suddenly, you know, Parish as an officer, I think. You know, it's great that he had this night, and I'm sure it'll sort of add to his, you know, status to an extent when he eventually the club. But, you know, I think Coquelin remains way ahead of him in terms of what he offers week in, week out. And as much as it pains me to say, I think he's way ahead of Arteta too. I think, you know, I'm a big fan of Arteta. I think he's been a great signing since he's come from Everton. But I just think Coquelin has had a really transformative impact on the team, and I don't think Arteta can match that tool. So, I mean, we don't really know the severity of his injury, but fingers crossed it's not too bad, because we need him back as soon as possible.
Yes, very, very soon. So one thing, let's talk a little about Gabriel, because he had his red card rescinded, which, you know, I would have never sent him off in the first place. But, I mean, if we look at the letter of the law, I mean, I think it is about the intent. As little, as minor as it was, you could tell he meant to stick his boot up towards him. I don't know. It's a slippery slope for me with that decision being rescinded. But obviously I'm happy about it as an Arsenal fan. But the big thing for me is the way he's kind of stepped in and kind of seamlessly adapted himself to the league. I mean, he seems like a very, very astute signing, probably our best. I don't know if many of our other signings have really come in as center backs and, you know, adjusted that quickly, really, because it took Mertesacker a while and Koscielny a while. But I mean, he's been quite the astute signing in that sense.
He's been great. And I mean, I think I talked about this on the article, so forgive me, but to sign a defender of that quality in the January window was a massive, massive coup. You know, everyone talks about how hard it is to sign a quality quality player at that time of year. And there's so many clubs who needed centre-backs at that time. Manchester United were on the market. Chelsea, arguably, with one eye on this summer, where they spent, you know, weeks chasing John Stones, only for it to not come off. And we got in there early in January, secured him for a very reasonable fee. And I think he's been fantastic. I mean, he reminds me of Koscielny, obviously, in terms of his speed and his aggression. But even I think there's signing. A more... Yeah, to be honest, in terms of his reputation, he was relatively unknown, certainly in this country. And, you know, he hadn't been at Villarreal too long. And before that, he was in the Brazilian league, which doesn't have the best reputation over in Europe. So I think he's just been absolutely tremendous in his... the way in which he represents Koscielny is just the acceleration in his development. You know, he's come from nowhere, and at 24, he looks like a Champions League-ready defender. I think he's a really, really exciting player. I think the reason that he's adapted quicker is because he has a kind of a natural aggression in his play. He seems... You know, it's no surprise that it was him who got intertwined with Costa, because he to also enjoy that physical element of English football. And he's never been bullied, you know. He's come up against some big centre-forwards, the likes of Lukaku and Boney, we've seen him battling with, and he's never looked out-muscled. So, I think he's... I mean, in some ways, the great shame is that the suspension feels like a little... Even if it's just the knock to him, you know, it's allowed Mertesacker back into the team, and I feel like, actually, Gabriel, had he not been sent off against Chelsea and had we achieved a positive result, would probably have kept his place.
But, you know, I have a feeling that we're going to start to see a bit of a different rotation. Like, I don't think that Mertesacker's necessarily going to be phased out, in a sense, but mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a lot more rotation specific with Mertesacker. You know, we've seen him play with Mertesacker, and that's good. I think a lot of people have a feeling that the more long-term, even though I guess Koscielny just turned 30 as well, so it's not that he's a spring chicken, but, you know, he's established himself as one of the best center backs in the league, you know, a great understanding with Per. But you think that a guy like Gabriel is going to work his way into, you know, if you made me bet on it, you know, opening day of the Premier League next season, I see Koscielny with Gabriel starting.
Right. Yeah, I could see that certainly. And I think actually, for the first time in a long time, I think we're in a very healthy position with our centre-halves. I think we've got, you know, in Gabriel, Koscielny and Mertesacker, we have three of roughly equivalent quality. Koscielny and Mertesacker obviously have that great understanding and a really strong partnership, but there's no reason the others can't develop that. And I think Callum Chambers at fourth choice still looks very raw, but the potential is there. And you know, I think as a fourth choice centre-back, you probably need someone in that mold, you know?
Of course. And, you know, I think I'd rather have that than, like, the Squillaci type.
Of course, a player who's not going to improve. Like, Chambers could, you know, he's still so young. What is he, like, 19, 20, something like that?
He's 20, and, 21, whatever it is, yeah. I mean, as a defender, right, especially as a center back, that's such a young age. You know, he can take years to develop, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's absolutely reasonable. And I think, you know, he played at Spurs, and obviously there was the own goal, which was a bit unfortunate. But I think for the most part, he looked relatively solid. And I think it's important to get him game time in the domestic cups. Otherwise, he is going to stall in his development, you know, and that's not what you want. So I think we've got a really nice set of four there, as long as they all stay fit. And the ability to rotate, I probably agree with you that we might see, you know, in the past, if Koscielny and Mertesacker have been fit, there's been no question they've been on the field. But I think Austin might protect them a bit more, bring them in and out of the team. He can use Gabriel. Some occasions he can use Chambers. So he's got some options there, and that's big progress.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking it's going to be a little bit more like what we're seeing with the attack. You know, we say Arsene's saying that he's kind of deciding who he goes with between Walcott and Giroud based on opposition. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if we're facing a team full of a pacey front line with multiple pacey players, maybe you play Gabriel just because of that to, you know, counteract a team that might have that kind of pace, you know. So specifically, like when we, you know, I think even with everybody fit, next time you play Chelsea, you probably play Gabriel again, even if it is against Diego Costa, because of, you know, the pace they have around them. So it's interesting to see how that's going to pan out, but it's exciting.
Indeed, and it depends on how you want to set up. You want to defend deep, you want to play a high line. You know, if you want to play a high line, you don't want Mertesacker anywhere near it. So it might be, like you say, a case of horses for courses, but that feels, you know, as we've said, it's great. I mean, huge advance on the days of having to bring in Sylvester or Squillaci.
Oh, dear Lord, don't say that guy's name. The fucking fucking fish face or whatever fish head, whatever the hell he was.
Yeah, dark times. Truly nasty dark, bastard. Dark times.
Yeah, those were dark. Those were dark. But we have yeah. Leicester at the weekend. You will be at the match, is that right?
I'll be at the match. My first visit, actually, to Leicester's new stadium. And they're going really well, aren't they? To my enormous surprise, under Claudio Ranieri, they've had a great start.
Yeah, they've been doing quite well. I believe they're still sitting ahead of us in the league, I believe. Is that right?
They're in fourth, yeah, and we're in fifth.
So that'll be quite the test. You know, they've been no joke. Some great results. Guys like Mahrez and others have been, you know, delivering for my fantasy team at least, and playing quite well. it's gonna be no joke, yeah. Up there. It's quite the test, and you know, I'd say it's more than just a banana skin. You know, that's what people normally look at it that way, like, oh, you know, you have to be careful. But this is gonna be a true test, and hopefully the guys can rise to the challenge, because you know we should have the quality to beat them, but we're going to have to see a coherent and disciplined display to really get anything from that match.
Yeah, and if he's available, because of course he's still awaiting the charge for whatever it was,
unruly
conduct
or whatever. Yeah,
yeah. But if he's available, this might be a game for Gabriel, because in Mahrez and James Vardy, Leicester have some attackers with real pace. You know, who can offer a genuine threat. There, Vardy's been absolutely on fire. He's super quick. So Vardy versus Mertesacker is not a race I particularly want to see. So this might be a game for Koscielny and Gabriel. So we'll see. And hopefully Coquelin's back. If not, I guess Arsenal has a choice to make between Arteta and Flamini. Does he go with the captain or the goal scoring?
I don't know. He might have to ride the hot hand there. You know, his vein of form. Yeah. Considering no one else is scoring consistently, he might have to ride that. Who knows, though? It'll be interesting to see. You know, Arteta, you know, I'm happy he's still in the squad. You know, mm-hmm. it's quite clear that his legs have seen better days. And that's really where we're most, I don't know. I guess that's where I feel like he's most vulnerable. But I guess that's been, you know, the recurring trend or the theme for people when they watch him. It's just there's not, you know, not that he was ever a lightning quick player, but you never thought he was behind the pace in his Everton days, even in his first season, maybe two at Arsenal as well. But it's certainly slowing
up. Yeah,
no,
not at all. I mean, not at all. And that's partly because he's such a smart player. You know, he's always one step ahead in his mind. But, you know, it was noticeable in Zagreb when we went down to 10 men, he really started to look terribly overrun.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's hard when you're a man light, but you know, players breaking past him a little too easily. I think part of the problem as well is that he's been out for pretty much a year. You know, that was his first start since, I think, in the Champions League. So it's a huge amount of football to miss. And I don't think you can get back to that top elite competitive level straight away. And the reality is that with Coquelin now in the squad, he's probably never going to quite get the run that he might need to reestablish that rhythm. So you do slightly fear for him, but I think I agree with you. It's great that he's in the squad. I think he's someone who everybody respects and who offers a huge amount of leadership and tactical intelligence. I just think that when you play him, you've got to protect him by putting more physical players around him. I wouldn't want to see Mikel Arteta playing deep alongside Santi Cazorla. I think if you're going to play him, you've got to put a guy like Aaron Ramsey in alongside who can fight those fights a little bit easier, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I definitely see that. You know, and hopefully, you know, he can still be productive and give us a lot over the course of this season when we need him, you know, in a way that Ruzicki has done for us in the past, another forgotten name who somehow at the age of, how old is he now, 34, 35? I mean, when he's healthy, he still has legs, which is, considering all the injuries he had, is quite surprising. He still has that burst of speed. Hopefully we'll see a little bit of him springtime.
Yeah, you know, he was one of those who, when the Capital One Cup team was named, you suddenly thought, oh, hang on, where's he? Obviously
still injured,
coming from yet another injury. Yeah.
Of course.
But I mean, you know, I always feel with him, I almost wonder if, like, the reason he's got so much left in his legs is because he's missed so much football. You know, he spent a lot of time with his feet up.
That was his quote, right? I mean, he said that since he missed so much that he felt like he had the legs of a much damaged younger player. I don't know.
I hope he comes back and contributes, because he was pretty unhappy this summer, you know, there were some quotes flying around about him not being overjoyed about his contract being extended. But
it was a club option, right, that we picked up.
Exactly that.
Well, and I think the best move that he's done for us already was, I'm sure he had a role in helping to convince Peter Cech to come to Arsenal. So more power to him for doing that. And yeah, good for him. But I mean, hopefully he can do something, contribute a little bit. You know, my good friend Joseph, you know, Mr. I Hate Your Club, thinks he's a waste of space and time. But I mean, I think having guys like him and Arteta in the squad, whether it just be for experience and just the cameos they're going to give us, maybe be the Christmas time period when we have all these matches, you know, these guys can really make the contribution that make the difference between, well, I mean, I don't know. The title dreams are already starting to fade. I haven't quit on them yet, but you know, it could be the difference between second and third, say, you know, maybe not winning a title, but it can make the difference. And these guys have so much invaluable experience. All right. Well, since this is the Pintcast, we always do predictions as well as goal scores. Give me a score line for this weekend at Leicester.
Oof. Okay. I'm going to go big. I'm going to go 3-1 win for Arsenal.
I like the sound of that. Who's going to score for the Arsenal?
Alexis is going to end the drought. He's going to score 12 goals.
And what was that? I couldn't hear the last one. So you said Alexis to score 2, and who's going to score the other?
And then Aaron Ramsey.
Well, fuck a duck. I mean, if you're going to steal my predictions, I should have just gone first. no, it's all right. I don't have to adjust this. I'm going to stick with what I thought initially. I was going to go 2-1 to the Arsenal, and I was going to say Ramsey and Alexis. So that's not really.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I don't think we're going to burst out yet. I mean, I'd fucking love it. It's just we haven't seen that coherent play yet. So, you know, grind out a result, get that 2-1. You know, Vardy maybe to score for Leicester. Actually, no, I'll take it back. I'll go with Mahrez so he can contribute to my fantasy team still. So we'll go with Mahrez. good rationale, right? Great rationale. You love that logic.
Foolproof.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we leave this, we had a couple quick little things. We haven't had the draw yet for the next round of the Capital One Cup, have we?
We have.
Who do we have?
We have Sheffield Wednesday.
Beautiful.
Wait, Sheffield Wednesday.
I'll take that away. You know, you were talking about how we need to see the some of these guys get some more playing time. You know, it's a shame that the Jeff is going to be out for a little bit, I believe, who was someone I was excited to see play a little bit. I'm sure you were as well. But yeah, get some of the fringe players, maybe a Wobi, you know, get guys like, you know, but you give Joel Campbell another game. Did you think Joel Campbell did anything to warrant anything yesterday?
Do you know what I think about Joel Campbell? I think like it's hard to fault him because in every game he plays, he works extremely hard. Like I was really impressed by the way he tracked back to try and win the ball back. I think he does quite well when it comes to holding the ball up. He's all right with his back to goal. He just doesn't seem to have quite that killer touch in the final third, which is interesting. You'd expect that to be the one element of his game that was strong, but he doesn't. I think he almost seems so focused on delivering on the team front that we actually miss out a bit on his individual quality. I don't think he did anything to push him up the pecking order, but I don't think he was a disaster by any means, and I certainly expect him to get another opportunity at Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we can get a couple more. I mean, if we get past Wednesday, get another draw against a team that's from the Championship or something like that, just because, I mean, we need to get matches for these players, you know? I mean, look, we don't have as many, you know, a lot of the guys that we hope to see in the Cup this season got sent out on loan, you know, and Arsene made a statement the other day about, you know, actually you're going to see a lot just more rotation within our first team squad because, you know, he said it the same way, that those guys have all been sent out on loan. Most of the guys who would normally be getting there, you know, would be bleeding into this Cup. So
yeah, guys like what's he called, Akpom and Zelalem, and
yeah,
you know, these guys are just not around. Hayden,
right? You know, and the Akpom one has always been curious, you know, considering the injuries we had and all that, to let him go, considering he looks like such a natural goal scorer. But you know, I still think probably the best for him is to be playing week in, week out, just to get that experience, you know, if he's not going to be regularly featured within our team for now. I don't know. It's going to be exciting. I mean, this Cup is a great chance. You know, we don't really get, you know, I was really excited years ago when we got to all the reserve matches on Arsenal TV and all that. But, you know, you don't get a chance to see these guys so often. So it'll be great that it won't be a team like Spurs where we have to play such a prominently first team, well, team out there. But yeah, I thought it was really good in that cup match, though. Just the fact that, you know, we had some of these guys who, you know, you were talking about questions about the selection, and, you know, we brought back in, we rotated the fullbacks again and all that. But I'm sure Arsene had a word with them before, just saying, I mean, really, you know, you had a chance out in Zagreb and you fucked it up, you know, looking terrible. Most of these players who got rotated in, and they had to go get the job done. So that said, I expect a lot of that rotation to still be in effect, you know, to see those same fullbacks, Arteta in there, a spine of a experienced team, but still mixing it up a bit. So
yeah, and I thought Kieran Gibbs really, you know, that feedback on board, and I thought I had a pretty strong game. Mathieu Debuchy, on the other hand, I wasn't convinced at all by his performance. So I agree he'll get more chances because this is a guy who's a France international. He's not going to accept, you know, not playing at all. He's made that pretty clear,
not
pretty
much
publicly.
Longer.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. If I were a betting man, I wouldn't say he's going to be in that squad come summertime. That's probably more because he's not first choice. But it looks like there's a reason. You know, my tocayo, my first name is actually Hector. So Hector Bellerin is doing well. I'm a fan of that. He has established himself and is looking quite good as our first choice right back for the future. So long may it continue.
Exactly. The future and the present.
Yeah, exactly. So exciting stuff. Well, look, thank you so much, James, for joining me. You can follow this fine fellow on Twitter at Gunnerblog. Like I said, read his stuff, listen to him on the Arscast Extra. Thank you so much for joining me, James. It's been a pleasure as always.
Pleasure, man. Pleasure's all mine.
Great. Thanks so much. We'll be back next week, and look for the space later. Talk to you soon. Bye.